you're listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends, just like the song implies. If you heard the lyric in the song, you have musical ears.
Phil needs coffee.
I wasn't looking at your ears, I promise. Hi, it's Phil. Thanks for listening to part two of episode 327. Gonzo, Greg Spillane, Katie L. Sasser, and Lauren Howard Hayes are here. And oh, look, it's intern Ricky.
Yep.
Intern Ricky.
Ricking it up.
We are two drinks into the intern Ricky game.
Yes, we are.
Which I have not explained yet. But I will.
More to come.
We have so much happening on the show. It is just, I mean, we were, I have the callback to the first part. If you haven't listened to it, go back and listen, because we actually understood kind of what Bitcoin is.
Yeah.
A little bit.
And what happened to Bitcoin this week, and whether you could still make tons of money off of that, whatever it is. And we also found that there were three movies out this weekend, and only one is worth watching. Which
Detroit.
One is it?
Detroit.
Manny the Movie Guy did the reviews, so go back and listen to that. And subscribe to the program, please. This hour, Dr. Kurtz comes on the air with us in about a half hour or so to talk about the hepatitis C cure that just got approved by the FDA this week.
Oh, that's cool.
Nice.
So, finally, you can mingle with others without any concern. And you might not die from liver failure or whatever it is. Kidney failure? Liver failure. Hep C? It's one of those organs.
Yeah, failures.
Liver? Okay. Yes. And also, there's some food allergies that you don't necessarily have when you're born, but they maybe you have it, but they don't manifest until you get older.
Uh-oh.
And so you're wondering, why am I getting this now? Why am I all of a sudden allergic to oysters in a vending machine? Another callback to part one.
For good reason.
Yeah. So Dr. Kurtz will talk about those things. And he also wants me to ask him about the whole idea of a single-payer system for healthcare. And also, Mike the Gardener is going to be on. And we're going to find out all kinds of things from him, because I have a bunch of gardening questions, and maybe you do too.
How much should I pay for one?
I find out that our program is being pirated by a couple of pirates who happen to be sitting in the studio right now. Are you Facebook Living the show,
yes.
Lauren and Katie?
Yes, we are. What's up, guys?
Arr.
Program pirates.
Pirates. Ahoy.
I'm not looking at your ears. I'm looking at your eye patch and your hook. Hey, Aquasana. You know who Aquasana is?
Aquasana.
They make your water.
Oh, I thought it was a pop star.
They come out of your tap at your house. The water comes out of your tap, and it's filled with all kinds of chemicals that are slowly going to kill you and your family and burn the skin right off of your bones. But if you have Aquasana, all of that water can be clear, crystal clear, delicious, safe, wonderful water. Every spigot in your house, the shower, you dance around in the shower, and all that poison is coming out of your shower head. And if you had Aquasana, you wouldn't be putting all that stuff on your body and in your hair and in your eyes and inadvertently drinking it. So Aquasana removes all the heavy metals, the herbicides, pesticides, industrial solvents, all that stuff that's in your water. And they make home water filtration systems. They also make personal water bottles, so you can walk around and fill it up with a garden hose. What the heck? It's water. When you drink it, it's completely safe and delicious. But it came from a garden hose. That's what Aquasana does, exactly. So go to our website, philhewlettandfriends.com, click on the sponsor page, and then you'll find Aquasana there. Click on their button and start getting healthy. In fact, their slogan, Aquasana, live healthy. And subscribe to the show, will you? Big green button on the website. Click on that. You can pick your poison if it's iTunes or Google or whatever it is that you use. It's there. You can just subscribe. Never miss a show. Let's get things going. Gonzo, Greg, what day is it?
It is chocolate chip cookie day today, everybody.
Yay! Chocolate chip cookie.
Yeah. Which is hard to argue with. I mean, you know, there's a certain attraction to chocolate chip cookies. My question is, why do we have to have a damn day for every damn thing?
Yeah.
Right? Didn't we just have a hot dog day the other day, and it was hamburger day, and
yeah.
You know, just stop already.
Soon we're going to have a pot day, marijuana day. I mean, pot smokers already have 420 every day, right?
Sure. I mean, yeah. We'll get there, though. It is chocolate chip cookie day. I think 75 years since the invention of the chocolate chip cookie by accident, by the way.
My favorite cookie.
The lady that the lady that came up with it, let's see, what's her name? Ruth Wakefield was...
Of course it was a Ruth. One of
the, she of was course, the original grandma.
If you see the picture on the internet, you'll say, yep, that's Ruth, all right.
Yeah.
Nickname her and Chippy. Her husband ran the Toll House Inn in Massachusetts.
Oh, nice. How do you realize they invented it? Oh, that's so cool.
Mm-hmm. And it was an accident, apparently. She was trying to make a solid chocolate cookie. So she changed up a recipe and added some Nestle chocolate in there, and it came out wrong, but actually right.
A solid chocolate cookie is overshooting a little bit, don't
Isn't
you think?
Isn't that exactly how penicillin was created?
Probably.
Kind of the same thing.
The guy was trying to make pure mold instead.
Right, in this half-assed mold came out instead. So yeah, she broke up some of the Nestle semi-sweet chocolate to put in her recipe, and it came out to be magical. So
right.
And the perfect thing when you get the munchies.
Exactly. So so at 4:25 or so, that's when the chocolate chip cookies start getting chomped down on, right?
Become very, very popular, yeah. So increasingly across the United States, we're seeing states legalizing or decriminalizing recreational marijuana. Colorado, being the first, right? And what else? Is it Oregon?
Oregon, Washington,
Washington.
Nevada, Colorado, California.
So when do you, California starts what, next year?
January 1st. And then New York's going to vote.
Too quick.
Feels ready.
Well, no, the reason I'm staying on top of it is because I've purchased for like $5 millions of stocks in marijuana companies.
Are you for real right now?
I'm for real right now. And so when they all go to a dollar, I'll have millions of dollars, he said with his pinky on his cheek.
This is why Phil talks about pot all the time.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like insider trading. Please, buy more pot.
It's underway here in Nevada as of last month. And as with many states, there's difficulty in dealing with banking because the banks don't want to touch the money because it's still federally listed as, you know, basically the same as heroin, right?
Yeah, so how do you remedy that? Do you go with a federal banking law, or do you just make it legal on a federal basis?
Well, I mean, that's what they're talking about. In Colorado, most of the banks work on a don't ask, don't tell kind of system. I was doing some reading, and I found it interesting that a lot of them use Febreze on their money before they take it to the bank.
No way.
I heard that.
Yeah, so it doesn't
Febreze
stink
on their
like
money.
Weed.
Febreze.
So, but there is a move afoot to, and this is a long shot, but there is a senator in, let's see, New Jersey, who's trying to pass the Marijuana Justice Act, which would basically give states an incentive to, you know, decriminalize it in their state. So we might see progress on a national level. It's not likely given the current political climate and, you know, Attorney General Jeff Sessions, who does not really seem to be a 420-friendly person.
Yeah.
But recent surveys, let's see, a CBS News poll said 61% of Americans think marijuana should be legal. 71% think the federal government shouldn't intervene with the states that, you know, have legalized it.
Yeah.
And overall, 88% of Americans, according to this poll, support medical use of marijuana.
How about that? So
we're moving forward. And so Phil will be not only rich, but high.
Yes. All right. I'll be able to afford my high.
There you go.
I think is what we're talking about. All right. So here's this is something. This is right out of the no way that this ever happened. So there's a doctor, she's a lady, and she's a pregnant doctor lady, and she is herself in the throes of labor?
Sure.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
I mean, throes just sounds...
in labor?
She's in labor. She's
okay, so
labor.
Yeah, that's definitely in the throes.
Yeah, so, and I don't know if she's doing the he blows or anything like that, right? I mean, that's what you learn when you have kids. You learn this whole Lamaze thing. Okay, he blows, he. I don't know if she was doing that or not. But she was at the hospital, of course, because she wanted to give birth to a baby. And while she's there, I guess somebody needed a doctor who knew how to deliver a baby. And so this pregnant in-labor doctor, while at the hospital having her baby, delivered somebody else's baby.
What?
That is so cool.
And then gave birth to her own baby.
It's almost meta in a way.
Is that? Yeah. This is like a weird
like Inception baby.
Parallel universe. It's like a Fellini movie. When's the last time somebody said it's like a Fellini movie? Yeah, they've graduated to David Lynch movies.
Yeah, sorry.
Eggs.
Nobody gets that reference anymore.
That's why I'm just going like,
Everybody at the beginning.
Well, the 90s kids are
Hey, let's talk gardening, shall we? Because that seems like the best place to go after talking about that. Joining us now is the author of the book, Vegetable Gardening for the Average Person, as well as the creator of the Seeds of the Month Club, where members receive non-GMO heirloom variety seeds every month, which I think is a great idea. His show, the Vegetable Gardening Podcast, uploads every week, and you could find it on his website, averagepersongardening.com. Mike Podlesny, let's call you Mike the Gardener. Welcome back, sir.
To be here. Thanks for having me back, guys.
Oh, yeah. It's great. Now, you are so enthusiastic about gardening, and I love that because I've been trying the best to do this myself. Before we get into my questions, though, tell me a little more about the podcast. What do you do on the Vegetable Gardening Podcast? What's it about?
Well, the podcast has been around almost 9 years now, and what I do is I interview industry experts from across the globe. I've had people on from New Zealand, Canada, U.S., all over the place. And what I'm trying to do is kind of gather as many tips and tricks and techniques and different ways to garden so that listeners could grow their best garden and try to avoid a lot of mistakes that I see a lot of new gardeners make.
Yeah, I'm sure I've made a half dozen of those mistakes, so I have a lot of questions for you. Let's get started. And it gets so hot in the summer, Mike. Honestly, I think my plants are actually burning to death just sitting there. What can you do to help plants survive the summer and the heat and unexpected storms that come along in the summer as well? It's just a weird time of year to grow stuff, I would think.
Well, I'm surprised to hear that your plants are burning up. I thought California was getting all kinds of recently,
but no. It's like 100 degrees out here, really.
It's awful.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay, so that is actually, believe it or not, good temperature. A lot of your hotter weather, your eggplants and your peppers. Tomatoes don't really normally like it that hot because they like it somewhere, around 85 to 95 in there. But in order to kind of help you with that and so that your plants aren't always burning up, use a drip irrigation system. If they're not expensive to put in.
Yeah, I've got, that's what I have. I run one of those plastic rubber black tubes. Hoses, tube things, and then you just poke one of those things in there and you run a smaller hose, tube. A tube, and then on the end it's got this little drip thing and you adjust it, and so that's what I do. But I only run that like 3 times a week, so they don't get constant drippage. They get drippage like 3 times a week. It seems like the right amount, but they still
so they can be grateful.
And I worry about it's so hot and humid right now. Then we get a little bit of a misty rain kind of thing, and the leaves are all wet. And then the rain stops, the sun comes out, and now the leaves aren't only burning from the inside; they're frying from the water getting crushed by the sun.
They're boiling.
Yeah, I mean it's just a tough time. But so the drip is a good thing then.
The drip irrigation is a good thing, and I always recommend it at 100 degrees. There's only so much you can do. You can shade cloth and things like that. That you're starting to get into some things that could be very expensive, especially in your area where it's hot all the time. I talked to a number of people from who garden in the Southwest Arizona, and that's a lot of stuff that they have as well. The scenario described where it rains or you get the mist and then the sun comes out and now your leaves are scorching. There's a whole heck of a lot to do.
Yeah, there's
sorry.
Nothing you can
I wish
do.
I wish I had more. Obviously with leaf disease that you would get, there's a lot some fungus that might develop because of that change in temperature. There's some foliar sprays, organic air that you could use, such as there's neem oils and things that you could use. But
neem oil, I use that. Yeah, I use that a lot. You mentioned the fungus and all that. I want to ask you about this and sharp focus it a little bit. Because a lot of people, and myself included, we have plants and trees. And the frustrating thing is they get those funguses and weird diseases. And the more I read about it, the scarier it sounds. The leaves, when they fall off, you got to get rid of them in a hurry. Because then that fungus gets into the soil. The fungus winters or overwinters, whatever the word is, in the soil. And then the springtime comes around when the tree is, you know, growing new leaves and fruits and all that. And then blammo, the fungus is on the leaves again and you can't do anything. And what I read is the only way to get rid of it is to get rid of all your plants, soak your soil with as much water as you can, cover them with some kind of plastic that allows the sun to come through, and then cook the soil with the sun for like 6 weeks, and then wait for a while and then put in some kind of soil amendment and then start growing stuff again. But I don't want to get rid of everything I've spent years growing in my backyard. Is that the only solution, Mike?
I mean, you missed egg and hold. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh. It's a piece of flamethrower.
Flamethrower. That's right. That's what Greg would do. Flamethrower.
Yeah.
Well, not really. I mean, it depends. The way you described it, it sounds like talking about plants keep coming back every year. We're not so much the vegetable gardening plants where the tomato's done, you just throw it out and then you can rotate it to a different part of the yard. For trees and things like that, there's not really a whole lot you could do. My trees every couple of years will get some kind of fungus on it. I don't really do anything to them. I just kind of let nature course, and I do okay with it. Obviously, my climate out here in New Jersey is going to be different than yours in California.
Yeah.
Sure.
There's different soil amendments. You could put down some kind of barrier on top to cook the soil, so to speak. But if you have plants there, you just damage the roots, which isn't going to be the plant.
Yeah.
My recommendation is when we're talking about the plant that is going to be coming here, I personally wouldn't do anything. That's just kind of let it go.
Well, I like that solution because that sounds easy.
Easier the better. Nice.
All right, Mike the gardener, here's one for you. I have several plants that get real big each year, and I trim them back, and then they grow back, and they seem okay with that. But what I'd like to do is use some of those trimmings to make more plants. And what I do is I stick them in a pot, and they shrivel up, and they turn into soil. how do you properly propagate a plant or a tree? Is there a process, and is it generally the same for everything?
No, it depends on the plant. So, and if you're taking like a tomato plant, you take what's it's called a center shoot or an offshoot. So, if you had a main branch and then you had another branch going off of it, if there's a branch in between that grow to 3 or 4 inches, you cut off and then you stick water for, you know, maybe 3 days and it'll start developing roots, and then you stick it in soil and you're ready to go. That's how you would do a tomato plant, and a lot of other vegetables work the same way.
Yeah.
Not everything, at least not in my eyes, the stuff that I've done is not ever take a cutting off and create a new plant with it. Yeah. There's some that you could that are fantastic. Spider plants, which predominantly here is an indoor plant, but in other areas they can have them outdoors, is a wonderful one. You literally can take a spider plant in a couple of months, cut bunch of their shoots, and literally create another 100 plants.
Is a spider plant like a creeping Charlie? Is that what that is?
With the creeping Charlie?
Oh, see, I think maybe that's what we call them out here, and over there you call them spider plants. It's the one that you have indoor that you don't want your dog to eat, by the way.
Oh.
No, you definitely don't want your animals to eat. I don't want my animals eating any of my plants, but that's a whole other topic.
Yeah, right.
No, the spider plant is it's a white and green leaf, sort of looks, I don't want to say like fern-like, but about as close as I can describe it, yeah. And that's a good one. As far as trees go, I don't really do much propagation. Yeah. I like to buy my trees from a local nursery, and usually trees are grafted from, you know, a couple of root stocks.
Yeah, and that takes a real farmer to do grafting. I'm not going there. All right. Now, do plants complement each other in the garden? I mean, should I put some thought into what I plant side by side?
Absolutely. Absolutely. A couple of good combinations is if you could plant your carrots next to your tomatoes, basil next to your tomatoes. There's a lot of different combinations that you could do. Either the couple I just mentioned, they complement each other well because tomatoes are tall and carrots are root crop. They grow in the ground, so get some shade from that. And that's one way to complement. There's what I like to do, especially around my peppers, is I'll do a perimeter of marigolds, and that has to bring in a lot of pollinators and a lot of other beneficial insects that are used in my gardens. Right. I would recommend that there's a lot of good books out there where you could do a lot of different combinations. I highly recommend it, that if you do tomatoes, plant something else right now because it's going to help
gotcha.
Your tomatoes out.
You know, they should teach this stuff in school, shouldn't they?
Absolutely. I agree. Funny, I just wrote an article and I did an infographic on gardening in schools and found some pretty fascinating statistics about the number of schools. It's about, I think we're up to 26% of public schools in the United States now have a school garden. And what they're finding is kids who actually take part in the school garden are showing improvements in test scores, eating healthier, wanting to learn more resources. And this kind of all stemmed because one of a friend of ours is a teacher, and I started doing some research, and I was pretty impressed by that. I hope we get that number from 6% up over 50% soon, but it looks like that the numbers that are coming in, a school garden is very beneficial for the kids. So if somebody says, I want to start a school garden, I'm for it, and I'll do anything I can to help it along.
Yeah,
they still have 4-H club though, right? And that was part of it.
Yeah.
You know, you'd raise your, you know, prize winning goat, which I did. Thank you very much. But there was also a whole gardening angle to 4-H as well, right?
Yeah, well, we have a pretty good 4-H program in our area here. It's not too far from here, and they do a really nice job, teach the kids a lot about the gardening. You know, how to get started, soil, not overcomplicate things. Try to keep. And, you know, like you just mentioned with livestock, the club is usually where a lot of kids get their first interaction with, you know, chick, goats and cows and just a lot of other things. So they do a really good job, too.
Yeah. Mike, the gardener, check him out at check him out at averagepersongardening.com. And his podcast is the Vegetable Gardening Podcast. And it's spectacular. It's been going forever. And you continue going forever, just like your plants do. Mike, thank you so much for being on the program. I'm going to get back into the dirt later today.
Awesome. Guys, you guys have a good day, and try to stay cool.
Yeah,
you too.
Yeah, more people are gardening now because, you know, a lot of people can grow marijuana now, so more people in.
Yes, that's right. You got to learn how to do all those things, don't you? You do. All right, so let's see where are we? We in a little bit we're going to talk about Hep C with
thank God
with Dr. Kurtz. Let's see. Oh, you know what? We talked on the program a couple of weeks ago about robots and Facebook and all of this and how they were trying robots. And so as science can be, you find out after the fact what in reality your wise guy idea was, and it didn't really work out so well. Then Facebook kind of had a fail when it came to robots, didn't
they? They did. So Facebook, I guess, created a robot, which I was actually unaware of. They not only created
you,
one.
You, Katie, unaware of robot activities?
It's weird, right? They not only created one, they created two, Bob and Alice, the two robots. And apparently, they had to switch the robots off because they started making their own language. They were using the language that we use, English. I'm saying us in this room. But they were taking out words that they found superfluous, and they were saying, like, you know, we're not going to use the, that we're not going to use a, or anything like that. So they continued using the language and started creating sentences like, I everything else, to which Alice replied, balls have zero to me, which sounds like the computer's just breaking down, but apparently it was assigning numbers and like creating its own language that they had to eventually
decode. It sounds like they were making our language more efficient by taking
that's
out
exactly what they were doing.
The connectivity.
But what do we need? What are these robots supposed to do originally? Is there any indication of what they were supposed to do, or just supposed to chat with people? Do we need, like, is a robot that posts cute cat pictures on Facebook, or, you know,
yes.
Here's what I. Robots
coming
don't,
up with new
they don't
filters.
Go to lunch, you know, they don't take a picture of their lunch and post that on Facebook, so nobody cares about that. They don't go to the gym and say, hey, I'm at the gym working out. I mean, what do you talk to a robot about?
They're probably going to decide, Greg, what ads are going to run on your Facebook feed and which ones play video with the audio turned up all the way without you asking it to. So that's
right. What offensive political statement can I make to you to make you not want to go on Facebook ever again?
Ever again.
Exactly. Now, when it comes to statements, political or otherwise, newspapers, when they make mistakes, they correct them. And there's a newspaper that has apparently been making a mistake cake for centuries.
Centuries. Out of Louisville, Kentucky, there is a paper that has been apologizing for every time they misused hot dog by describing it as a sandwich. So the paper has given like a blanket statement saying that they're apologizing for referring to a hot dog as a sandwich, because you can call a hot dog a Frankfurter, but it is clearly not a sandwich, is what this paper is saying.
What do people say about that? I think what we should do is go to our authority and find out for sure. So let's just get the question answered definitively. Joining us now is the Vice President of Public Affairs at the North American Meat Institute, and he's the President of the National Hot Dog and Sausage Council.
Looking at the website right now.
Eric Mittenthal. Eric Mittenthal. Isn't the website hotdog.com, Eric?
Hot-dog.org.
Hot-dog.org.
It's an organization.
Yep. Yes, of course it is. All right, so Eric, let's pose the question then. Is a hot dog a sandwich or isn't it?
Is the Dalai Lama just a guy?
Much
more than that. A hot dog is more than a sandwich. It exceeds the sandwich category. So the correction in the paper was right. They were right on to correct that egregious error from many, many years.
All right.
Since 1886, I believe it said.
Yes. Okay. So you were fully aware of this story, and you give your stamp of approval that now, from this point forward, when they refer to a hot dog, what shall they call it, Mike? Eric?
They should just call it a hot dog. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Nice and easy.
Definitive right. Proof. Nice.
Nicely done. Okay, sorry to bother you during your busy day, but that's all we need from you today. Although, before I let you go, what's new over there at the Hot Dog and Sausage Council?
Well, we just wrapped up National Hot Dog Month. Had a blast. We did a big joke contest asking people for their favorite jokes, and so I got some really good ones and have been having some fun.
What's the winning hot dog or sausage joke for the month of July?
Oh, man, you're
not prepared. Right. You're not
prepared. Go to the website.
For that one.
All right.
Go to the website, hot-dog.org. It was a limerick, actually. So the limerick was, you can search all your internet blogs and your college course catalogs, but for facts about meat, no source can compete with the Council for Sausage and Dogs.
Yeah.
We had to the one who sucked up to us a little bit.
Yes, exactly. All right. Well, good thing you didn't repeat any of the jokes about hot dogs and sucking, but that's good. And so, Eric Mittenthal, thank you so much for popping into the program just briefly to help us out with the story.
My pleasure.
All right. Have a great day.
Thank you.
All right, see, we've got friends in high places.
Apparently.
A head wiener.
Technically, isn't it a sandwich, though?
No, he said it's not. It's a hot dog.
Bread.
It's a hot dog.
Okay.
It is I would say it is a form of sandwich, but I appreciate his point. I think it is a hot dog.
You know, chefy people, they'll take a slice of bread as opposed to a hot dog bun. And they'll slice up the hot dog and all of that. And then there's also, I was watching one of those chefy shows the other day, and there's a hot dog place. I forget where it is, and my wife's probably listening.
Is it in Pasadena?
It's somewhere in the east where they take a thick, like a Texas toast thick slice
of
bread.
Like a hoagie.
And they cut the top of it like they're splitting it in half horizontally.
No.
Right? Not vertically, but horizontally. Sure. Like you're making another slice of bread making two slices out of one slice. So, but they only go down about, I don't know, 3 inches or so, and it splits open the top, and that's where they stick the hot dog. And so you have this whole thick slice of bread with the hot dog in the top.
Oh, my God.
And so,
amazing.
What is that? Get Eric Mittenthal back.
Well, you know, when you're broke, a loaf of Wonder Bread is bread.
Yeah.
It's a hamburger bun. It's a hot dog bun.
Right.
It serves a number of purposes.
Yes,
so
it
that's
does.
Why I confuse. Some people may get confused about the sandwich angle.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on from there because
way too much time on that.
Yeah, we do. Because we're about to talk about diseases.
Ooh. Again.
Yes.
Haven't we done that already?
Yeah.
Remember the first part of the show?
Yes. People have been dropping like flies, just dying from all kinds of stuff because it's just great. But I tried my best for all week to try to get the guy on behind this story. I don't know if you saw this. There's a new product that allegedly makes sure the rhythm method or the pull-out procedure while having sex actually works. It's a sticker called the JIFTIP. JIFTIP. It covers up the man's urethra. She was a singer. Urethra is the thing that we're covering. Not urethra, but urethra. It covers that up to prevent things from getting out during sex. Now, before the moment happens,
people,
you just remove the GIF tip and go about your business.
But I feel like there are some things that would go wrong with
yes,
that.
Are things.
Yeah, like failures. But now, and the adhesive part of it, I mean, that's, I mean, strange. Anyway, health experts are giving this a big no.
Yeah.
They say this is nowhere near safe nor effective. And the company says on their website that the GIF tip, quote unquote, is not approved for STIs or pregnancy prevention purposes. And by the way, $6 for a 3-pack.
Oh, so that's $2
per GIF tip.
Per GIF tip.
Yeah. I wanted to.
Versus a lifetime of screaming and.
See, and on I checked out the website. They make the case about, you know, not feeling your full experience if you're wearing a condom versus feeling the full experience. But then getting backed up by that sticker might be a little annoying.
Oh, my God. What if that just popped off?
Yeah. The moisture would break down the adhesive.
What moisture?
Hopefully.
Oh, if there might be something wrong.
What's
Hello?
It? Have you had sex? What's it like? all right. An estimated 3 to 4 million Americans have hepatitis C. Oh. You could be dating one of these people right now.
If I was dating.
Sorry, Hep C humor always bombs, doesn't it?
I mean, it's a C graded.
Wait, what was the one in how many? What was the statistic?
3 to 4 million Americans have Hep C. So what are the odds?
Well, there are four people in the room.
Yeah.
Well, then.
No, it's no. So let's say half of the population is 150 million.
Mm-hmm.
And 4 million, up to 4 million. So that's like...
all of Los Angeles.
It's like it's like 2%, isn't it? 2% of people? Of women. Well, 2% of... No, it's like...
Just women?
1% of people.
Not all women.
It's 1% of people have Hep C. Is that what it is?
I don't know.
Anyway.
I'm lost in the numbers.
You lost me at Bitcoin with the math.
This week, federal regulators approved the first drug to treat all forms of hepatitis C in as little as 8 weeks. The pill combination is made by a company called AbbVie, Inc., and it ain't cheap.
Oh.
We'll talk about that in a second, but let's find out more about it. And a couple more stories in health news from the director of Valley View Wellness Medical Center in Garden Grove, California. Check them out at vvwellness.com. Dr. Michael Kurtz, hello, sir.
Hello, sir. How are you doing?
I am doing great, even better now that you're here. Now, what is Hep C and what does it do to your body?
Okay, Hep C is a form of hepatitis, and this is how things changed. Back when I was in medical school in the 70s, before any of you were born, there was Hep A, Hep B, and non-Hep A, Hep B.
Oh.
In the 80s, all of a sudden, there became a real scare that there's a new form of hepatitis called Hep C, and there was no treatment for it at that time, and people were dying from it. And what can happen is you can get liver cancer, you get cirrhosis, you become jaundiced, you get weak, and many times you die.
Yeah, it's not good. And a lot of people, 3 to 4 million Americans have it.
Yes. Do you write for WebMD?
What's that?
No, never mind.
I don't know. No. This is my experience. You're funny. No, you know what?
Hands on.
So what happens is, you know, now they're saying that there's a scare that the baby boomers, that's our generation, have a higher incidence of Hep C. So I have a lot of people coming in now to be tested for it. And the test is basically a blood test, and it's a Hep C antibody test. Yeah.
So you give them a little bit of Hep C in their blood to see how they tolerate it?
We don't do that, Phil. I'm sorry. We don't believe in that.
No.
We test them for it. We take the blood out. We don't give it back in.
Oh, I got you. All right. But, you know, prior to this week, there have been therapies, but not really a cure, correct?
Well, there have been cures. They've been pretty much cures because we have a personal friend. I won't tell you her name. She got Hep C about 25 years ago, and she said she got it from kissing a patient, which we know isn't true. And she was on the medicine for it back in the day, you know, which a lot of doctors are still using. 9 months of misery. You give yourself a shot every week. And she was experiencing flu symptoms for 5 days. She was miserable.
Yeah.
Well, it's been 25 years. She's in remission, we'll say.
Yeah, yeah. But but never has there been a pill.
No, never a pill until now. No, no. It's always been injections.
So so what do you know about this new drug? I believe it's called Mavyret. Like favorite, Mavyret, M-A-V-Y-R-E-T.
Marivet.
Marivet? Oh, I just spelled it wrong.
You got the letters wrong.
Yeah.
Murray Vet.
All right. What do you know about it, and what do you think?
Well, I don't know anything about it until you sent this to me. I started reading about it. I think it's something to try. I think it's a lot better than doing the interferon that we were doing years ago, and now they have a new one out that's like 8 weeks of therapy, and you know people aren't happy on this one either because there's a lot of side effects.
Well, it's expensive, too. Full treatment, sure, if not covered by your insurance, would run you about $26,000.
Oh, yes. My gosh.
Yes, that's the problem now. The insurance companies don't want to cover anything.
Yeah. Well, you know, the other thing, pharmaceutical pricing seems so arbitrary, doesn't
yes.
it? I mean, I read somewhere it can cost a company like $100 million or more to get a drug approved, you know, yes. with all the R&D. And then a lot of the money is spent to either pay the government outright or to satisfy requirements set up by the government. But still.
Plus, for every drug that's released, there's about 20 of them that weren't. So you're paying for the ones that weren't released.
Right.
You know, that they lost money on.
But, you know, come on, if they treated 4 million patients, every single patient potentially with Hep C, and they charged $26 instead of $26 million, they'd recoup $100 million expenses and profit $4 million.
That's correct.
You know, so anyway, it just
seems...
You're
all about the finances today.
No, I agree with you. I'm in favor of what you're saying.
Yeah, all right, good. Hey, I have another topic for you, Dr. Kurtz.
Yes, sir.
Preliminary data from a large new national study that is currently under review suggests that nearly 52% of American adults with a reported food allergy developed one or more food allergies after the age of 18. What do you think of that? I mean, it's like teenage onset. That's not fair.
Well, you want to know, I read that same thing that you sent me, so I read that also. So I'm going by experience. So what I'm finding is a lot of times people don't know what their allergies are until later in life. Because the symptoms get worse as we get older, you know? So kids, when we were young, we got the penicillin shots. You had a reaction to it right away. You know, all of a sudden, you can't take penicillin. You're going to die. You're going to have what's called an anaphylactic reaction.
Yeah.
Stop breathing. Your heart stops. You need to get a shot of EpiPen or else you will pass. So what happens is that we're finding it in a lot of kids and adults. They have food allergies. And we just started, you don't know this, we just started doing allergy testing about a month ago. And we're finding things that people don't even know that they're allergic to, because what happens is it's over a period of time, it can get worse, or it can be right away. You drink something, you eat something, anaphylactic reaction.
Yeah.
You can't do that. But people are experiencing different symptoms, and they're not aware of it. Like, if you have the itching, you have the rash, you have the trouble breathing, you know you're allergic. People are coming in now, a lot we're seeing, they're having nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, gassy, things like that. Should we talk about this at lunchtime?
No, we shouldn't. But, you know, you're at a cocktail party. Do they still have those? And people say, you know, how's it going? Well, I'm rashy and gassy and, you know, and all that. Oh,
everybody
sorry to hear that.
But people don't know. And even people have dog and cat allergies and they don't know. They don't want to face it.
But, you know, when you're a little kid, you know, for instance, that you're allergic to, say, peanuts, right?
Oh, yeah, that's a big allergy. That's a big one.
But can you not know that you're allergic to peanuts as a kid, and then all of a sudden you have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich on your 18th birthday and you get anaphylactic?
People don't know because it happens a lot of times. Like I said, it happens gradually. They take it, they itch a little bit, they take it again, they stop breathing. Oh, my God, I'm allergic. I didn't know that.
Well, Dr. Kurtz, we have all these wonderful tests for allergies.
Yes, we do.
And some of them are tormenting type tests where they, you know, poke all kinds of holes in your back and they say, okay, go home and we'll talk to you in 2 months. But when is there going to be a good treatment for allergies?
I know. Well, there is, but not for food allergies. That's a problem. But you know what? We do that testing here. We do the skin testing now here. And we could tell them right away what they're allergic to.
Yeah. So get on a plane and head to the Valley View Wellness Medical Center because that's the place.
You know, when you're on a plane, they ask you, do you have food allergies? Do you have peanut allergies?
Yeah.
You know, God forbid you're on a plane, what's going to happen? Can they take the plane back down?
You can't take an EpiPen on a plane, can you?
You can.
Oh, you can?
Yeah, you can.
Yes. And a lot of times they say, is there a doctor on board, please? Doctor on board? You know, they call us.
Yeah, and you get to jab the EpiPen in the thigh instead of, but yeah, all right.
I've done that before. A friend of ours was allergic to additives, food additives.
Oh, gosh.
Back in the day, and one day she's in the women's bathroom.
Yeah.
Her husband comes to get me. You got to go in the women's bathroom. My wife passed out. Yeah. I don't run in there and give her an EpiPen.
What are you fighting allergies today, Dr. Kurtz? Or what?
No, I've got little GERD issues. We'll talk about that one day.
Oh, all right.
I don't have allergies, I wish. It would be easier.
Oh, that'd be easier. Okay. All right, we'll talk. Now, while I have you, Dr.
Yeah,
Kurtz.
Sir.
I want to find out a doctor's perspective, a doctor in private practice, which you are, correct?
Correct, I am so far.
Now, here in California, Governor Jerry Brown and other members of the state legislature are talking about moving this state to what would be, I believe, the nation's first single-payer health insurance system. Is that a private practice doctor, is that a good or a bad idea?
That is a very bad, evil idea.
Evil idea?
Yes.
That's worse than bad.
Oh, yes. Let me tell you who's going to make the profit on this.
Who?
That would be the governor. That would be the state of California. That would be everybody that you're paying taxes to. Because now we're going to be taxed to the max for health care.
Yeah.
And we're going to be paying for those that don't have it.
When did we start thinking that health care and health insurance were synonymous? They're not, are they?
They are now.
Oh.
Yeah. They are now. But they're all government run. The government's behind it all.
So who would pay you then? You'd get a check from Sacramento, or would I have to do a copay at the counter?
No, you know what? I might not be your doctor. They choose your doctor.
Oh.
It's based on where you live.
Yeah.
And there's going to be 1,000 people coming at the same time.
Uh-huh.
And you're going to have to wait.
Well, that's an exaggeration, 1,000, isn't it? Wouldn't it be more like 800?
Okay, maybe 800. No, but you know what? I'm from Michigan. You know this about me. I'm from Michigan.
Yeah.
And back in the day in the 70s, Detroit, I was a doctor in Detroit. I was a student doctor. We had people from Canada crossing across the border to come to our hospital.
That's when Canada first went with their single payer, yeah, was in the 70s, right?
And I said to them, you know, we're students here. They go, we're going to get better care from you than our doctor. It's taking us too long to get there. People were crossing the border back in the 90s to come here from Canada to get MRIs, to get health care. The Prime Minister of Canada a few years ago went to Florida to get cardiac surgery.
Hmm.
What does that tell you?
Yeah. But you talk to folks who've been, they don't remember the 70s in Canada. You talk to people now who live there, and they say, yeah, well, health care is free. Well, somebody's paying for it.
They're paying for it.
Yeah, exactly.
They're paying for it. We're all going to pay for it.
Yeah, all right. Well, this argument is just starting, and I don't know if it's just going to
happen. We've only just begun, and it's a bad idea. We're the only country in the world that has the best insurances right now. They're getting worse. And with the government behind it, I mean, look at what the government runs. The government runs the VA. The government runs Medicare. The government runs Medi-Cal. They're all in bad situations.
Yeah.
The worst. And I became a doctor to work for my patients. I don't work for the insurance companies, although now they're our bosses, and I will never work for the government. So I'm sure now Jerry Brown is going to fire me.
Yeah. You're fired.
I'm fired.
You're fired. Well, you can't be because you're my doctor.
I'm your doctor. I'm going to make house calls.
Well, what happens when you quit? Well, who's going to be my doctor? Your son? Your son's a doctor. Can I have your son?
Let me tell you about my son. So my son's been a doctor now for 5-6 years.
Yeah.
He will never know. He never knows how good it was. He deals with the insurance companies on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to be a doctor anymore. And it's sad.
Yeah.
And that's the way it's going. I mean, the 80s were the best.
Here's my solution, Dr. Kurtz.
Yes, sir.
No insurance for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
We just cash and carry everything, and you have like a life insurance policy for that day when you have like something catastrophic,
right,
and that covers that.
Well, that's
like
what people are doing. Catastrophic, you know, that's a good insurance because if something happens, you
and
know,
then and then the money. Consumer controls the price. I mean, what do you mean you're going to charge me $150 for a visit? I'm not coming back to you, and then you lower your price to compete with the doctor up the street who's charging $30.
Exactly. Well, you know what? A lot of doctors now are going concierge, which is cash.
Yeah.
Get rid of the insurance companies. Patients pay them. Bill your own insurance.
What if that's against the rules?
But then they're going to go out of business.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. There's going to be a lot going out of business.
All right. Well, I don't know what to think yet, but I respect your opinion, and that's why I wanted to ask you.
I'm not for it. I'm for my patients. I'm not for the government. I do not want to be run by them. I don't want to be told by them anything.
All right.
I listen to you. You know that, Phil. You've been with me for a long time.
I know. What are you doing making this show political all of a sudden? You know we don't talk about politics here.
Sorry. Okay.
All right, Dr. Kurtz, feel better with whatever it is that you've got, and I don't
I'll
wish...
I'll take care of it, I promise.
Yeah.
I'm okay.
I'll see you soon. I need a blood test.
Yes, you do. Everybody, hope the family's doing well. Great talking to all of you.
All right.
Good talking to you.
Dr. Kurtz.
You guys.
See
have
you later.
Great,
all right.
Have a great Friday. Have a great weekend.
There you go. All right, that's Dr. Kurtz, and we learned a couple things, didn't we? And we at least got our thinking caps on about that other topic. Let's at least start thinking about it and come up with your own opinion. There's one. All right, so we have Gonzo Greg Spillane, we have Katie Elsesser, and Lauren Howard Hayes.
Hi.
I'm Phil, and intern Ricky's in the studio with us as well.
Intern Ricky.
Ricking it up.
See, can we record that?
Sure.
Yeah.
Can we record that?
We'll keep it.
All right.
We'll take royalties.
Yeah. Gonzo, dude, you still with me?
Yeah.
All right, good.
I didn't
know. I haven't been called dude in a while.
Yeah, I know.
But bruh. Yeah.
Remember the days when we used to respond to that?
Everybody, that was the great thing.
Is this not
during
a thing?
The 80s.
I say dude a lot.
You
a
do?
Lot.
It was
a
the
lot.
80s.
Really?
A lot.
Yeah.
I say dude all the time.
A lot.
Say,
hey, Katie, the phone's ringing.
Dude.
It's the 80s call.
Dude. Everybody.
Greg, I want to tell you, my daughter, she gets home, my youngest daughter, Victoria, she gets home, and the first thing she does is she sits down on the couch, and the dog jumps up on her lap, and then they make out for like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Is that a
good
thing?
Yeah, she's going to die.
What?
Apparently. Yeah.
Great.
This show
has been all about disease today, hasn't it? We led with disease, we came back to the second half and talked disease, and now more disease. Yeah, you know, everybody knows these people that their dog jumps up on them and they're just blah, 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 all over their face and everything. And people, have you heard people who do that say, oh, no, a dog's mouth is cleaner than a human's? Have you heard that?
Yes. Yeah, I've heard it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I can't lick my butt crack, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's not possible. And there's scientific research from people that say, here's this guy, Marty Becker, who says, all you have to do is look, watch, smell, and you'll realize that that's not possibly true. They go through the garbage. What do they lick? What do they say when they meet their friend at the park? Yeah. Where does their mouth go? Where does their nose go?
Right.
It goes there. There's a huge, amazing list of bacteria that can severely impact human health.
Yeah.
John Oxford, a professor of virology and bacteriology at Queen Mary University in London.
Smart guy.
Says, yeah, smart guy. It's not just what's carried in the saliva. Dogs spend half their life with their noses in nasty corners or hovering over dog droppings, so their muzzles are full of bacteria, viruses, and germs. So I'm.
Yeah. We're beside ourselves because it's just common sense. There's no way that that's clean and safe.
Don't let
them near your face.
No. Or better yet, don't have a dog is the other
option. Oh,
that's rough. That's over the line.
It's getting political now.
It's getting really political.
Look,
now.
If you want to walk around, you know, cleaning up your pet's poo, that's fine. Yeah, it's good. Have fun with that.
My roommate owns the dog. Yeah. I just pet it.
You enjoy it.
There you go. I'm old-fashioned.
You know what? If you feel like you need to say something, go to philhewlettandfriends.com. There's a little blue tab on the right. Click on it. You can leave us a voicemail. You don't even need a phone to do that. As long as you have a microphone attached to whatever it is you clicked with. Then you're good. And if it's your phone, come on. Your phone has a microphone, doesn't it?
That is true.
Yeah. Right. Holy crap. All right. By the way, we've only had two drinks this entire show. We've been playing the Ricky game. The intern Ricky game, and I'm going to reveal now what the game is.
Okay.
During the course of this program, Ricky has only said, nice.
This is very true.
Two times.
Yes, I've heard both.
I've heard it a couple times.
I mean, I think the last...
That's two times.
I think the last episode...
More than two.
Have there been more than two?
A lot more than two.
Oh, have you been keeping track?
Actually, yes.
So some people are drunk now.
Exactly.
I've had a lot more than two drinks, but I wasn't playing the game.
You're so Vegas, Gonzo.
All right, so we'll pay more careful attention. I only hashed two of them, so I'm going to ask.
Can we have the Phil makes a really bad joke game?
Oh,
how about that?
Now that's a drinker.
He'll be sauced by the end of this thing.
Alcohol poisoning. Scientists want to know what's funny, and according to researchers at England's Warwick University, that's how they pronounce it, right, Greg? It's not Warwick, it's Warwick University, like they do in the East Coast. They've identified what they say are the funniest words in the English language.
Mm. Ooh, can we guess?
Yeah, but you may not. I don't think you're going to guess correctly because I'm looking at these words and I'm surprised. I'm not surprised because these are guys in lab coats who don't get out much.
Yeah.
All right. Funniest words in the English language.
Yeah.
Wiener.
Not on the list.
What?
That's so perfect. It could tie in with a hot dog.
But booty. Is on the list.
See,
made you laugh.
Made you laugh.
All right. Well, words with K's are usually considered funny by comedians.
Yeah, in comedy, consonants are funny. The more consonants.
Well, I have one with a consonant.
Okay.
We might have to bleep it because you just have to. Tit.
Oh.
The way you said that. Yes. It was so light.
I was thinking of farm animals when I said it.
What?
So it wouldn't be a naughty word.
Oh.
So by by extension, titmouse is funny.
Yes, right? Exactly.
Yeah.
Woodcock.
Yes, exactly. That's funny, but it's not on the list.
All right.
Really?
Oh.
Booby. Just a funny word, right?
I think it's the way you say it.
It is. Like this. Booby.
Hooter. And
Hooter.
Nitwit.
Yeah, okay. No.
Now, they researched men and women, and none of those words came up on men or, nor women's lists. But for men, the words that men found funniest...
Marriage.
Commitment. No.
I don't know why, but here's the list. Buzzard, chauffeur, orgy, czar, birthmark, and raccoon are all funny words to men. I don't understand
not
this.
One
this
lab.
Is no, they're not.
No. Lab coat.
No. No.
And among women's favorites... Yeah. Juju, jester, and burp.
Okay, so we get three. We're very skeptical people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fart knocker on the list? That needs to be on there.
Fart knocker's a good one.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
That didn't make me chuckle in my knuckle.
Proving that science is an imperfect science.
What about words that repulse people? Like, you know, a lot of women are avoid of the word moist.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm not.
You don't work that into your conversation, do you?
I try and say it.
Do you?
Yeah,
as much as possible.
You go out of your way to call things moist. Yeah.
I do know Lauren's kryptonite word.
Oh. What? Oh, God.
Say it
yes.
now. You have to say it now.
I hate it.
Moist mayonnaise.
That's not my kryptonite word.
No, it's not your kryptonite word?
Mayonnaise isn't, but mayonnaise is. Oh, pee-pee. I forgot about that. Oh, she hates that.
I hate that. Mayonnaise.
You know what? When I had my hernia surgery a couple weeks ago, all the nurses, instead of saying, would you like to void or go to the, you know, would you like to urinate or, you know, do you need to go to the bathroom? They said, do you need to pee-pee?
Oh, no.
In that accent.
The nurses, you know.
Oh, God.
Go.
What?
Ready?
Is that how nurses
now?
Sound to you?
Yeah, I don't know. I love the nurses over there. They were great. Wonderful hospital.
Where did you go? By the way?
What's
did you go down
the
south of the border?
Lakewood Memorial? Is that what it is? Lakewood Memorial Hospital.
Sounded like you're in Tijuana or something.
No. These are
the
Filipinas, you know, Filipino nurses. There's a lot of Filipinas. I'm not saying all. I don't want to generalize, but it's a popular thing to be a nurse or a nurse. I'm a narcissist.
He's a narcissist.
They're more caring than white people.
Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah. I'm white. I can say that.
But why are you yelling at me? Why is the nurse yelling? All right. Because she cares. All right. Now, what happens when you don't get the proper tip from your person that you deliver your pizza to?
I always tip my pizza person.
Do you always tip your pizza person?
Yes, because pizza is a way of life, and pizza is the best thing.
And the delivering pizza is not a great job.
No, honestly.
Have you ever done it?
Yes, I have. I worked for Pizza Man.
Ooh, Pizza Man.
Pizza Man.
The Pizza Man.
He's the man.
Pizza Man. Well, apparently a girl in Redondo Beach did not tip her pizza delivery guy and woke up to a 4-page threatening letter.
Whoa.
Saying it was a terrifying note that was saying that she should tip and several reasons why. And one of the things that he said, he's kind of apologetic and yet not. He goes back and forth. He's a little wishy-washy in his threats.
Yeah.
But he says, please, next time, tip your delivery driver. And if it turns out that the delivery man is me again and you do not tip again, I'm probably going to rob you.
Uh-oh, that'll get you in trouble. That'll get you in trouble.
Yeah, the police are definitely looking for him. And then he says, I'm only joking, but not really. Don't risk it, though. Who knows what a disgruntled driver who can't afford to eat that day is capable of.
Oh, my God.
Wow. It's kind of a sorry, not sorry kind of thing there, right?
He's going through some...
Poor choices. Stuff. People make poor choices all the time. Very often they make.
If I delivered pizza and like a porn movie didn't break out, I would be disappointed.
Oh yeah, nasty see, and that is the thing. When I worked Pizza Man, you know, I'd be on the sitting in the Pizza Man place by myself at like 2 o'clock in the morning, waiting for phone calls, and the drunk girls would call.
Oh.
And they don't, you know, the whole pepperoni jokes would start coming out, the whole thing. And when you get off, you want to deliver something, your last delivery stop could be our place.
Oh, man.
Jenny, or Katie, you need to do that guy's monologue, or that letter as a monologue.
Oh, I will definitely do that as a monologue.
How about this guy? Gonzo, tell us about the dude who was taking a flight out of Las Vegas, or into Las Vegas. Oh. And maybe there's a monologue in here somewhere.
Well, last week he was going, he's flying out of Vegas, going to Oakland, apparently. The flight was delayed after a passenger reportedly stripped naked shortly after boarding the flight.
Yeah.
He removed his clothes.
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah, and then approached the flight attendant, and things kind of went south after that.
Step away from the flight attendant.
359 delayed for about 30 minutes, according to USA Today.
Yeah.
Arrived in the Bay Area about 20 minutes later than scheduled. So, but people have a like Vegas baby mentality, and they just kind of lose their mind, and this kind of thing happens.
And the truth is, it doesn't stay in Vegas if you pass a certain line, right?
Because apparently this is reported on NBC News. So it didn't
apparently
stay in
Tinder
Vegas.
Apparently Tinder didn't foot the bill for that one.
they didn't pick up the tab for this particular flight.
And he's in jail now, and he won't be able to enjoy this. And he'll be sorry to hear this, because they do get our podcast in jail, don't they? Yes.
Oh, okay. Krispy
Kreme and Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are joining forces to create a brand new donut.
Uh-oh.
And it hits stores today. Absolutely today.
We're going.
August 4th.
We have to go.
The donut comes packed with Reese's Peanut Butter Cream, topped with chocolate icing, layered with chips of peanut butter and actual pieces of peanuts, and then some peanut butter and chocolate drizzle is added on top.
Katie's
You're
having a moment.
Katie over
oh,
here.
My God.
She's crying.
All right, intern, go get it.
Yeah.
Go.
Intern, ring it up.
Here's one more thing for you. My gosh. This is gelato with alcohol in it.
Ooh.
Ooh. Okay, we just need a taste test of all these things now.
Boozy gelato flavors. Negroni is the brand name. Negroni.
Oh, okay.
Negroni. Negroni.
Yeah.
Look
it's
for
a good
that.
Alcohol. Mm-hmm.
Alcohol gelatos.
Ooh.
Sound like a good idea?
And do they come in like little shot cups, or do they come in pints?
And a little alcohol gelato.
Your hangover is going to be gnarly.
And a chocolate chip cookie.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
We're all set.
I'm so hungry now.
And a hot dog. Don't call it a sandwich.
And Chick-fil-A.
Chick-fil-A and a pizza.
Hey, that'll do it for part two. And part one, for that matter, of episode 327. So glad you tuned in. Thanks to our executive producer, Mike Stark, our producer, Brooke Peterson, her last show producer.
Aww.
For Katie, for Lauren, for Gonzo, for intern Ricky, I'm Phil. Talk to you next time on Phil Hewlett and Friends.